Hello and welcome to a brand new season of the Everyday Ayurveda and Yoga Podcast. My name is Kristen. I am a content creator at Team Halipule, and it is our pleasure to bring you another season of education, wisdom, and holistic healing topics. Our first episode is with Myra G and Emily Reed, who is one of our Ayurvedic health counselors at Halipule. I absolutely love this discussion, and it just might change the way you practice yoga. They talk about the purpose and potential of asana, yoga as a tool to balance doshas and agni, and how to really optimize your yoga practice as a gift to yourself and a remembrance of who you are as eternal spirit. A powerful conversation. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, everyone. This is Myra with Halipule's Everyday Ayurveda and Yoga Podcast. Halipule is here to support you to step into life fully. As humans, we have a knowing deep inside that life is meant to be a joyful journey. So today I have with me Emily, and we're going to have a discussion about yoga and yoga in relation to Ayurveda. Welcome.
Thank you, Myra. Yeah, good to be with you here today. And one of the things that we're often asked about is, what style of yoga do we practice or teach at Halipule? This is something that I know we discuss fairly regularly within the team, and I know you have quite a lot to say about it.
When yoga started becoming much more commercialized, the idea of a style came about. Prior to that, it might be a lineage or a teacher that you worked with, but it wasn't thought of as necessarily stylistically. So people would ask, well, what kind of yoga do you teach? And I'd say, I teach yoga. I did that for a lot of years until I realized it probably wasn't that helpful. But I think it's important that we recognize what yoga means and what it can do for us by having it as a foundational practice. And when I'm speaking of yoga, I'm speaking of all of the practices, and in particular, actually, pranayama and meditation, as well as asana, mantra, mudras. The purpose of the practices is something that it makes it worthwhile to understand what direction they're taking you, because sometimes people can misunderstand things about it. So, for example, sometimes people will go to an asana class and then they get emotional and cry and they don't understand why. And so these are the kinds of things that if we have some sense of the basis of what we're doing, then we can understand that we're getting to know ourselves inside, that it's a remembrance of who we are as eternal spirit, and that's what it's meant to be. Everyone has a starting point, but the idea that from an asana standpoint, the postures, that you have a practice that has a sequence that will have you feel relaxed and energized at the end of it, not feeling beaten up or not feeling like you want to go to sleep, but that you have a greater sense of your own energy. So many things that I hear about with styles these days are things that might be causing some imbalance. And I think yoga practices are actually not meant to do that.
Right. Right. And actually, just as you were speaking too, so often the entry point for people is asana. And that's what they call yoga, and asana being the physical poses. And that really it is this whole package, right? It's the asana with the pranayama, with the meditation, and that there's a sort of path that it's leading us to, right? Because what is the purpose? What is yoga there for?
It is that inner journey. It's a remembrance of who we are as eternal spirit. All of the things that happen, the challenges that we have in asana, the challenges we have in pranayama and meditation. You know, people often will say, oh, I can't meditate because I have a monkey mind. Well, that's actually why we're meditating. So I think it's important to recognize that there's not an endpoint to get to necessarily. I remember when I was first learning about yoga, I learned about samadhi, and I learned about the state of being that was possible And in the way I was trained, you know, oh, the goal, the goal. And it took quite a while for me to recognize that, oh, it's the process. That's life. Right. So what the practices can do then is they help us to build strength in the mind and the body when they're practiced in a way that supports that. You'll hear it said that asana prepares us for pranayama and meditation. But from my point of view, now is the time to start pranayama and meditation. Mm-hmm. And particularly with the way we've been living these days by doing too much and going too fast. These are things that imbalance vata dosha in us, or that light, airy part of us. And the pranayama then will help us be able to keep that in balance. It supports everything about us. If you think about it, pranayama, it's about our working with our breath, our life force. We come to do that, then we start to actually have some resilience in life, in daily life, right? Because by practicing regularly, we start to develop some discipline in the mind, and we get to know our mind and what it's doing with us. So all of these things support better living.
Yeah. And it's interesting you brought up vata dosha, and I was going to say, where does Ayurveda come in? How does it support a yoga practice?
Yes. Well, again, if the asana practice and the pranayama and the meditation are done in ways that are in alignment with who we are as human beings, then it will support the balance of dosha and agni. So the doshas being the five elements in us, and the agni being our digestive capacity for food and life. In other words, how the body and the mind and the spirit function together. So some people come to Ayurveda first these days, and they've not ever done yoga before. And if they start understanding and learning how to adjust their diet and adjust their lifestyle in ways that start to bring balance to the dosha, it actually makes it easier to do the yoga practices. And then the yoga practices become more a part of us, and we start to feel and experience the benefits of it. And so they work hand in hand. What happens too then is that when we have a regular yoga practice, we can step into our day with a certain degree of calm and consciousness. And all of that, eating well in ways that keep my mind calm and serene, then I'm going to make wise choices in life. And it also has us, we're not so occupied with ourselves, so that we can actually enjoy what's around us, to enjoy the people we're with and the experiences that we have in a deeper way.
Right. And it's often what we talk about, that flowing with the day. That's what it enables. That's certainly been my experience versus, you know, using will, using force, or flowing against things. So yes. And just, I mean, through the lens of Ayurveda, for example, what is movement in asana? So some of the styles of yoga that can be more mobile, so little to no holding of the asana, of the poses. What is that doing from a sort of dosha perspective?
Right. Well, I have to say something here about many terms that are being used today have developed, they have meaning associated with them now that was not the meaning that I learned. So for example, vinyasa meant that you connected the poses with the thread of the breath. There was nothing about it being fast. It would just meant that it was continuous. When things are practiced, when they're done fast, then you're probably going to be increasing vata dosha, especially if you're not really holding the pose at all. Most importantly is, are you breathing or not? So that could be done with shorter holds, as in the Ashtanga folks who will breathe five breaths. But those typically are going to be five slow breaths, not five fast breaths. And so then as you go into other types of practice, I recommend to still have the vinyasa aspect in the sense that it's continuous, because that's what's good for the mind, right? If you do a pose and then you stand around and look around a little bit and play with your fingernails and do some other things, right? Now that's your mind has just checked out. And so what we'd like is to have the practices be most beneficial if we're going to do them. And so bringing consciousness to what you're doing, even if you're going very slowly, we still want to keep the mind occupied in what you're doing.
I was just going to share, because the practice that we do really, and that you've very much shared with us, is the longer holds in the poses, but there's such a dynamic experience that's happening there. So, for example, being in a pose for about 15 breaths, whilst it's appearing steady and still, there's movement in all directions in terms of the direction in which the crown of the head is moving, and the tailbone in the opposite direction, the rotation, and then the transition, which is really coming out and going in.
Right. I was so wisely taught that the going in and out of the pose is just as important as being in the pose. It's part of it. And again, it took me a long time to really face that, it's the process. It's just like it's the process of life. And then it takes it to another level in terms of the impact and also the experience of it. There's a level of consciousness that can be developed with that, that then is taken into the rest of life. And actually, it's quite enjoyable.
And what about things, for example, Kriya Yoga, which we hear a fair amount about today? Again, just in terms of Vata, and I suppose there's Kriya Yoga and there's also hot yoga, and these, is there a place for them? Where might they be best suited?
Well, if we think about it in terms of the doshas and various constitutions and people's different needs, actually, there's something generally speaking, and it'll depend and again on the individual and their condition, but that for somebody who has a lot of vata going on, if there's a vata is out of balance, or that's the primary in their constitution, then holding longer in general is going to be a good idea, 20 breaths or so. Pitta is going to be more like 15 breaths, and kapha maybe 10 breaths. Now, how we judge that, it's sometimes good to get some input on that. But when we look at these different approaches, so for example, Kriya Yoga, it really depends on the attitude. There are many people who go into those practices, and there are many, many good practices there, but go into them with an attitude of trying to make something happen. And this is an outside-in approach, and we'll have a tendency to not only imbalance vata dosha, but we'll also have a tendency to build ego, which is not what we would like to do in the general sense. If you go to something such as hot yoga, in India, when the practices are done, let's say, depending on where you are in India and what time of year it is, but generally speaking, those temperatures are going to be what in the mid 20s to the high 20s, maybe the low 30s in centigrade or 80s, high 70s, low 80s in Fahrenheit. And so appropriate, you will sweat some, yeah. But when you make artificial heat, when you're living in a cold environment, this is extremely confusing for the body, right? Because first of all, it's artificial heat, and so it's going to be drying, and you tend to get dehydrated from it. But then you go out into a cold climate, and that can be very confusing for the body. So not something that I would recommend. I think there's a more moderate place for folks who live in a cold environment that would be better.
How do we want to feel at the end of the practice? I mean, how do we know if it's been balancing for us?
We should feel relaxed and energized, not beaten up, not worn out, not feeling like your nerves have been rattled, and not overly excited or stimulated. I notice that there's a lot of people doing things that they're associating with yoga these days that actually scatter your energy, and approaching poses in that way. And it would appear being more for looks than anything, but perhaps it's that stimulation. Yeah. And so that's not a great idea. That's going to imbalance the doshas also. And again, you should feel relaxed and energized at the end. And I say energized, that doesn't mean overstimulated. It just means that, oh, I feel good. My energy feels good. I feel clear. Yeah.
And what about Shavasana? First of all, what is it and why is it necessary as part of the completion to the asana?
Shavasana means corpse. It's the corpse pose. And so why do we do it? Well, let's say that you've gone through an asana practice. You've been breathing and you've moved and you've taken yourself to some challenge, right? And that's what we'd like. We're attempting to move prana, move energy that's not moving. For example, if your legs are very tight, the backs of your legs are tight, right? Then that's where we tend to hold a lot of fear. And so we do forward bends and we start to say hello to that stuck energy. When we do that, the nerves are a little bit jangled by that, right? Now, this is probably much more subtle than a lot of people think about this, but this is what's happening inside. And so the nerves are saying, whoa, okay, yeah, we did those new things. And then, oh, there's this fear, it's starting to come out. And so the very best thing you can do is Shavasana at the end. And that's why it's there, so that you integrate, so that your nerves have the opportunity to go, oh, it's okay, this is all good. In other words, I can do that challenge and then I have rest afterwards and the ability to integrate, to take it in, and then to make the proper adjustments and changes.
And is that sense of the settling of vata, like you were saying, because the excess vata, and I remember this from some years ago, but deciding that Shavasana was, I didn't have time for it at the end of the practice. So I could easily skip it. And I always know that when the vata is high, there'll be that little voice that might say, oh, but do you have time for Shavasana? Because obviously high vata being, hurry, quick, get on with what you need to do, rather than ground, stabilize, integrate.
So how I was trained, it's the most important pose. And so I'd suggest take a look at that, because earlier we were speaking about how the poses and all of the practices, they're meant to have us get to know ourselves and that we should feel good afterwards. And so we shouldn't feel scattered or overstimulated or undone.
Yes. And if that voice that says you don't have time for Shavasana, you know, you need to do at least 10 minutes to integrate. Myraji, for our students and our clients at Hale Pule, we will recommend to them to start with a daily practice that might be just one pranayama, for example, simple ujjayi. And then also just after the pranayama, having just a few moments, see if they don't have a meditation practice yet, but having a few moments with the eyes closed. Again, do you want to share a little bit about the energy of that in that space as well?
Yes. So just as you described it, starting with just having some breath awareness, perhaps practicing an ujjayi breath, and then sitting quietly with eyes closed. It's just that very beginning step of getting to know you have this inner world, and that actually you can be in charge of it. You can be the master of this. When I started practicing pranayama, I couldn't sit. And so I practiced pranayama laying down in the beginning because it was more important for me to learn how to breathe than to torture myself trying to sit up. And then, you know, once I started breathing more, it became easier to sit up. Again, though, the pranayama practices, and when I say pranayama, going beyond just some simple breath consciousness, but very specific practices that are meant to organize vata dosha, because vata is responsible for all the movement in the body. And so the practice, it should calm vata dosha, not aggravate it. The way we approach it is that when you're ready for some pranayama, then we start with some very simple things, and there is progression in it. The thing that's most important about it is that the benefits of it accumulate. So it's not just I do a little bit and I do a little bit here and there, and isn't that great? Well, that's nice. But the real benefit is when you do it regularly over a long period of time. And I had a person, a very wise teacher, who said to me that it's pranayama that will keep you vibrant in life, that will keep you feeling young and keep you healthier. And I took that to heart. I still practice pranayama. But it is extremely important that you sit and meditate. Even just sitting with the eyes closed, I recommend a minimum of 5 minutes. So doing pranayama practices and getting up and walking out the door is not a good idea. It's the same thing as not taking a shavasana.
Right.
And so just look at it as a gift to yourself. Even if you have no idea what you're doing in the beginning, you just close your eyes and sit there. And you might think, I feel silly doing this. I can remember feeling that. And then you start to find out, there's a little more to this. Yeah. It will affect all parts of your life. Everything is connected. Everything affects everything else. So when we breathe consciously for just a few minutes and keep the eyes closed for a few minutes, we have that opportunity for our nerves to calm down and to just to get to know ourselves.
Oh, Myra, I think we could talk about this a lot longer, but maybe that's all we have time for now. It's always interesting to hear from our community how you're getting on with the practice or if you've noticed any effects, and we'd love to hear from you. And we have our private Sangha you can join where we can talk about it further. Yeah.
Come and join us. This is great.
Yes.
See you next time.
Thank you to Myra G and Emily for facilitating such an important conversation. If you're interested in practicing yoga with us, Holistic Yoga with Hale Pule is a video resource library of a sustainable, holistic approach to asana, pranayama, mantra, mudra, and meditation. It's an essential and valuable resource for any devoted student or teacher of yoga, especially if you want to establish a home practice. The link to join will be in the show notes. Now let's om to close our time together.
In Ayurveda, we understand that we each have a unique constitution. Hale Pule's tridoshic approach is ideal for families and supports multiple constitutions. You can cultivate sattva in cooking, knowing that you're making meals that support everyone's constitution. Subtle adjustments may be required, but it doesn't need to be a stress point. To learn our tridoshic approach to create nourishing meals, join Simple Ayurvedic Cooking with Hale Pule. Their recipes are easy, delicious, and will leave you feeling energized. And the link to join is in our show notes.